we're talking about LeBron saying he won the two most difficult championships in NBA history, being down 3-1, and then last year in the bubble.
Yeah. I mean, it's the things that's never happened before, I guess he's referring to, or how it played out the way he's approached games and what he's seen. So, I mean, of course, you know, a lot of players do a lot of posturing for that title and put themselves on pedestals that no one has reached, because that's where, you know, society is now. People are measured by so many different things, and they're leaving legacies and they're trying to do other things, and everybody's trying to create their narrative. And LeBron is one of the best at creating a narrative to support his reason for him thinking he's the greatest or whatever the case may be, opposed to, you know, back in the day, it was let your game speak for itself and not put all these scenarios together that give you a reason. But, you know, the fans, we do it, media, we do it, and put all these things in place to rate and judge and, you know, qualify and solidify people's careers. So I guess that's another thing LeBron James is doing. But from his standpoint, there's never been a bubble or a scenario like that he's been in this year. And I guess no team has ever came back down 3-1 in a championship in the NBA. So maybe that's his argument.
Speaking with Alvin Williams. Al, good to chat with you. I'm gonna turn the conversation a little bit. James Harden, and I only wish I had this problem, he's going to make over $41 million this season. And he still has two more years on the deal. I believe the final of those 2 years that I'm talking about is a player option. So he's scheduled to make $41.2 million this year, $44.3 next year, and then the player option of $47.3 the year after that. It is mind-boggling, the numbers that are out there. And a guy that has now just finally said, okay, I'll report to camp now. Oh, yeah, I'll do my COVID test and do my little quarantine or my little isolation before I'm allowed to join my players. And I'm not really sure if I'm going to be sticking around in Houston or not, or if I'm going to try and force my way out, or if I'd rather be in Brooklyn. Al, I know you've been there on the player side, but whether it's as a fan, whether it be as a media member, whether it be just as a regular Joe Public, I look at this, and this stuff like this really pisses me off when guys do this. It really does. And I think it's a major issue for pro sports, but we're talking NBA. I think it's a major issue for the NBA when you have guys that can dictate and control in this fashion. What do you think?
I get your point. The one thing I'm always, you know, pro professionalism, right? You it's not just the organization that you make a stance against. It's a lot of times your players and so-called brothers that you call when you're in that locker room. At the same time, you know, players are showing everyone now that money is not the objective. Money is not the thing that's going to keep them playing. Money is not the thing that's going to, you know, not allow them to express their unhappiness. And a lot of times in the past, and even still, people are trapped by what they value money as, right? These guys have money. They have opportunity to make a lot of money. And, you know, if they're not happy in a situation, or they feel like they want a different direction, and they use their leverage, which everyone does in the business world or in some capacity, they use their leverage to get what they want, then hey, by all means, because at the end of the day, this is a business. Does James Harden love playing basketball? Yes. I'm sure. Does he love competing? Yes. Does he love being in the NBA? Yes. Is he happy in, you know, does he love being in Houston? Probably not. So it's just another way of everybody using their leverage, you know, bargaining, and that's what he's doing. And like I said, from the aspect of, you know, letting your team down or people next to you that's going to go and play alongside of you, that's the only thing. But as far as his way of approaching how he's dealing with the front office, ownership, or however, to get something done when he want to get it done, then I'm all for it. I know you're pissed, man. We had a lot of blunt conversations, and we had a lot of conversations over the time with lunches, and a lot of these topics come up. So I already know you're boiling right now. Your head is steaming because you're pissed off.
Well, listen, hey, the reason it bothers me as much as it does, Al, sorry, Jonesy, but the reason it bothers me as much as it does, and I hear what you're saying, but I think part of the reason, and part of the reason he can feel this way, or part of the reason he has the safety net to feel this way, in my opinion at least, flies against what you just said. it is about the money, because maybe he wouldn't do this or act this way or take this stance if he didn't have $120+ million to fall back on and go, at the end of the day, I got guaranteed money, so psh, whatever, who cares? I got this money to I got like that. There's a term I want to use. I got that blank you money, or I can just dictate what I want and do what I want, because what are you going to do about it? And you can't convince me that the Houston Rockets have not done everything possible, or at least a lot of things possible, maybe not everything, a lot of things possible, to surround him with the type of talent that he needed to be better or to have a better chance at a championship. And a lot of it then comes back on him, the way you play. He's a hell of a scorer, might be top three scorer in the history of the game. Unbelievable scorer. But if you want to play that way, that style, with the ball in your hands and dictating, controlling everything all the time, that may not be ultimately good for the team concept overall. So you want to go to a better team that has a better chance at a title? Well, then you're going to have to change the way you play. And if you're going to change the way you play, then why couldn't you have done that with Chris Paul, with Eric Gordon, with Clint Capella, with PJ Tucker, with the list goes on of guys that have been around you, and now you're going to say, oh, I want out of Houston now, we're not good enough? You're supposed to be the top player, man, and you're being paid handsomely to do so. I don't agree with it, man.
I get that, and to your point, you know, he does have to change his style of play. He's going to have to sacrifice. Every player has to do that from the standpoint of winning, especially winning a championship. But as far as the finances, that's the thing that eat people up. But, you know, you work hard to create that leverage. Like, you couldn't know, could he have done it when he was at OKC? Probably not, right? He wasn't at that stage of his career. Right. But a lot of these guys, LeBron James, these guys, they work so hard to get the big contracts, to get the notoriety, to get the leverage. So when it's time to pull the lever or push the button or making a power move on their side, this is what they worked hard for. That's what all the years go into. And we'll never – it's unfortunate that we won't look at players as businessmen, because in the business world, that once I stop playing and start getting more into it, that's the world. Right, that's how people are very shrewd. Mm-hmm. People, it's really no loyalty. It's transactional, and it's what have you done for me, and what can I get out of it? And I'm looking at this man as, you know, as a businessman. I'm not looking at him as a basketball player right now. I'm not looking at his style of play, which I do not like. I'm looking at his way of going about getting what he wanted to get done. And I think if you talk to any businessman, they would probably understand and probably would agree with him, or understand it at least.
Al, right. I'm looking at something else from the Rockets' standpoint. I mean, I'm not to poke the bear even more with E. I'm with you. Like, hey, man, like I work to create this leverage, and I don't know. Especially when you're in a marginalized position, or you're like, hey, if somebody's paying him $120 million for 3 years, imagine what that dude's making. And I know that's the way a lot of the players right. look at it. But I'm going to go in another direction now. You've got Steven Silas, who's a first-year coach. The organization has changed the personnel. I wouldn't say they're rebuilding, but Westbrook is gone. They got John Wall. Harden wants to leave. I mean, even if they keep him, he can be unhappy and make things difficult for a first-year head coach. And then I'm going to throw another layer on this, Al. And this is something that Stephen A. Smith wrote about maybe 20 years ago. And it's how African-American players, sometimes in the respect of the system, seem to respect majority culture coaches more than they do coaches of African-American heritage. Like, it's you know, it's something that you know, Stephen A. Smith brought. And that was 10, 15 years ago, where we haven't had, you know, like, the same proliferation and advent of African-American coaches. But, you know, is James Harden just being James Harden, I'm being me? Or is like, hey, man, they've changed coaches, they've changed GMs. I ain't with those guys. I'm just doing my thing here.
Yeah, I mean, you have to ask James that. But if you look at the structure and how, you know, where the respect level comes from. The respect level comes from when a coaching staff is the person who's going to make the ultimate decision. And if it's not a person of color in that position, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the coolest dude. I don't care if you're a former player. I don't care if you relate. I don't care what happens. They will not respect you to a standpoint of being a decision maker, being a leader. And if you don't have if those numbers aren't equal, then that's going to be a natural outcome or result when it comes to players looking at, you know, coaches of color and the impact that they'll have on their decisions. Now, you have some players that may understand that or whatever, but I think it comes down to anything. I'm going to respect the person that's going to, you know, going to manage my playing time, my value, give me the best opportunity to gain leverage, as we just talked about. And if you're not in that position, and players can read it. Players aren't dummies. Players know when a coach is there to pump you up, to work you out, to keep you, to tell your business, to be the mole on the wall, like be the mole in the office. So a lot of players and a lot of former players are put in those positions as though that's their responsibility. I remember myself working for the Raptors as a player development guy, and it wasn't easy every day going in the locker room and, you know, you walk in there as a coach or even as a director of player development and the conversation stops because they're not sure if they can trust me or not. Being a former player or being a black former guy, I don't even know if that's any part of the equation, but I just know for a fact being a former player, the trust isn't always there. So until I would get into a position where I could make a decision or do something like that, then I'm viewed a little differently. So, I mean, the structure of the coaching stature and the structure of it is always going to be like that until more people get into leadership positions.
Speaking with Alvin Williams, Al, I'm going to use this situation and Harden just kind of as a bigger jumping off point. And Jonesy, you may want to weigh in on this as well. I had a buddy of mine message me yesterday when all this Harden stuff was coming out about, you know, potentially demanding a trade or wanting out and everything else. And Jonesy knows who this guy is. And smart guy, makes a hell of a lot more money than I do. So, you know, more diplomas and degrees on his wall than I've certainly got. You know, a lawyer in Toronto, and he messages me, he goes, let me guess, Charlotte and Minnesota are at the top of James Harden's wish list. And obviously tongue-in-cheek, joking back and forth. And I'm going to read you word for word. He's a big basketball fan, too. Word for word, this is what he wrote. Talk about a broken system. Unions have very little place in most organizations in North America, including professional sports. But the NBA has negotiated a CBA that is making the majority of teams into wasteland destinations. Essentially saying, there's only what? We can sit here and argue. 3, 5, 7, 10 would probably be pushing it way too much. Places where players truly want to go and truly want to play. And that means you've got at least two-thirds of your league that unless you get lucky in a draft, you got no chance. I mean, how many teams in NBA, less than half of the league has won the title in the history of the league? That's a problem if you've then got a situation right now. Go either one of you can jump in.
I'm going to jump in first before Al. When I strip away the other part of it, and I watch this from the guy on the other end of the phone line, and I know, E, he's one of your favorite players, and he was traded for one of my favorite players and became one of my favorites here. Alvin Williams.
He's still the guy that I buy the jersey for. Absolutely. Yep. That's why. I'd still wear that number 20.
Alvin Williams left it all out there, and I love the way he played. And you know my measure, E. My measure is if we're playing at the park, Al, if we're in Philly and we're playing at the park on Sunday, am I picking Alvin Williams? Is he going to do everything he can to win? And that's how I judge a player. So while, you know, our friend thinks the system has created wastelands, there are guys that are dying to get into this league. And they don't care whether they're playing for Golden State and a chance to win or they're playing in, you know, for a team that's won 26 games, is 26-56 at the end of the year. They're an NBA player. They're making a good living. Yeah, they're going to try and get on a good team. But what's to say you can't be part of helping to turn a team, improve yourself, network for when you're finished, all of that? There's part of me that doesn't see it as that. Maybe only as a competitive person you see it as that. And you are competing. You are trying to win. But there are other ways. There are other things I think you need to consider, too. Just my thought.
Again, I mean, I'm relying with you, Josie, with that. You know, it's the system has how it has been set up through free agency. Once you give people an option, and the ability to choose where they want to go, and things evolve. Sport is evolving all the time. And if you just take a few years back before, 2015, a team like Golden State was never looked upon as a winning, I guess in the 70s or whatever the case may be. It may have won a couple game championship or whatever. But things happen, whether it's through draft, whether it's through free agency, and people, the players, are much more sophisticated. They're much more savvy when it comes to their career. They're not just going out there playing basketball, going home and doing whatever. They're creating opportunities off the court. That family is taken into account, finances taken into account, ability to market themselves. All of these things are taken into account now, where players have the voice and they have the ability to make these decisions. And the way the system is set up now, people will take a hit. Cities will take a hit. And from a fan standpoint, of course you want to see, you know, teams more balanced and more competitive situations than when we grew up, like the Milwaukee Bucks, Atlanta Hawks, 76ers, Boston Celtics, New Jersey Nets, New York Knicks. Like, all those teams are always battling every year. So it's not like that, but as that person mentioned, the structure I won't say it's flawed, it's just the way it is, and the players have an opportunity to take advantage of their careers, which I'm always in favor of that.